thing. So there, can we have a show of hands? Okay, so there's a few of you. I'll apologize beforehand if you get any hurt feelings out of what I'm about to say, but know that it's in jest, and I really do love working with you guys. No, honestly, I do. Honestly. So I'm the CTO of a tech company, and it's a privilege to be able to get involved in a lot of creative projects. So we're a small kind of 20-man team company, and we get to do some really fun stuff. But when I get invited to a meeting with creative people, my heart starts beating, you know, ga-dunk, 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 ga-dunk. Because I don't know if any of you have really worked with creative people before, but they sort of seem to think that what we do is magic, and then they also automatically assume that we're kind of all the best magicians in the world. And so sometimes you can get asked some pretty tall orders and get expected to deliver some pretty challenging projects. And so one of the projects I'm talking about today, I got called into such a meeting. I came in, I sat down, my heart rate's doing its normal da-dunk, 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 da-dunk. And they say to me, "So, Guy, we've had this idea." And then my heart's going, "Oh, no, da-dunk, 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 da-dunk." And then we want to play a game of tennis. And I'm sort of thinking, okay, well, what do you need me for if you're doing tennis? Da-dunk, 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 da-dunk. And then they're between two cities with a half a court in each city, you know? So that's the kind of situation I get chucked in reasonably frequently. Where's the clicker gone? There it is. Right, so about me. My name's Guy Sherman, as you would have seen on the last slide, and I'm the CTO of Rush Digital. We're a 20-person team. We're not actually just men. We have a few women in our team, which is pretty good. I'd like to see a few more. And we work in three kind of major verticals. We work in the games industry as Guns for Hire. So we're building a name for ourselves in the games industry in New Zealand as, if you've got a hard problem to solve, come talk to us. The next sector we work in is kind of mobile apps. So we do B2C apps, and we're moving into building enterprise apps. So if you're in a Downer or a Becker or a large enterprise, district health board, that sort of thing, and you want to build a mobile app to take some of your internal processes and make them more user-friendly, more streamlined, that's the sort of thing that we are beginning to do more and more of. And then the third thing, which is what I'm going to talk about today, is what we call experiential marketing. So it's when a company wants to do a marketing campaign, maybe an installation at a shopping mall, a PR event, and they want it to have some tech in it, they want it to be exciting and interactive, they come to us and we have a meeting like that where my heart nearly stops, and then we go away and build some really cool stuff. And so before I get started, because as you would have seen, the title of this presentation is really talking about how innovation should be enabling outcomes. And so I figured I would just go through a very quick discussion of what I call innovation, what I think innovation is, just to set the scene for the rest of what I'm talking about. So to me, innovation is a process or result of taking trustworthy technologies and combining them in a way that does something that nobody's ever seen before, that changes somebody's life. It changes the way we live. It does a new experience for somebody that they've never seen before. And so an example will be, when we finally get one, driverless cars, produced by a company who maybe I shouldn't name while I'm at a Microsoft conference. But anyway, you probably all know who's doing a lot of work in driverless cars. Now, about 5 or 6 years ago, I was privileged to do a lot of sailing on a boat with one of the professors from Auckland University. He was the head of the computer vision group at Auckland University, and they had just had a conference in Auckland around computer vision, and a lot of the stuff there was to do with Toyota, Mercedes, a lot of companies who are all working on driverless cars. And so I got to go out for a sailing trip with all these people who are designing driverless cars, and it was quite a fun trip. But something that really struck me when I was talking to them was, 5 years ago, they were doing work on stuff that we're probably only going to see in cars 5 or 10 years from now. And so as I got thinking about this, I realized that innovation is not necessarily fancy new technologies in terms of the components. Because in a driverless car, it's got to be really, really safe. And so by the time you or I end up driving a driverless car, well, we won't be driving it, we'll be being driven. But by the time we end up sitting in there, there's not going to be a single piece of that car that hasn't been tested to death. Because if there's anything that they're not quite sure about, they won't be selling it to you and me, because that's a lawsuit waiting to happen. So the thing about a driverless car is there's going to be nothing new in that car. But the first time you sit in one and it takes you somewhere, it's going to blow your mind. And to me, that's innovation. It's taking trustworthy blocks, putting them together, and doing something that blows your mind. All right, so on to story time. You might see that I've got a tennis ball machine there, and I've got some other equipment around the room, and I'm going to explain why I have that stuff. In case you're thinking of falling asleep after lunch, don't. You might get a tennis ball on the head. So stay awake, otherwise it could get painful. So back to that story about the tennis match in two cities. And in fact, it was more than just a match, it was actually a tournament. So the idea was, as you can see here, we've got essentially half a tennis court. And we had one of these set up in Christchurch, and we had another of these set up in Auckland down at the Stanley Street Tennis Centre. And so I'll just walk you through a few of the components that are in here. So dotted along this gantry, we've got four cameras mounted on the gantry looking down on the tennis court. They're wide-angle cameras. They're only 30 frames a second, which is, I'll talk about the challenges of that later. Next thing we've got a big video wall, and along with that video wall is a little camera filming our side and sending a video feed over to the same video wall on the other side. So I can stand on that tennis court and I can wave to you guys who might all be in Christchurch on the other side of a tennis court. And we can see each other, we can see the balls coming, that sort of stuff. Next thing, what we believe to be the world's first internet-connected tennis ball machine. So the reason we're fairly confident it's the world's first is because we looked around for them and we couldn't buy them, so we had to build one. And this is something, just to kind of digress a tiny bit, the maker movement is something that really blows me away, because 10 years ago, I probably couldn't have put together an internet-connected tennis ball machine for the price of the tennis ball machine plus maybe $100. But today, we can buy off-the-shelf electronics components that we can put into a, you know, internet-connect anything. And to me, that's really cool. Right, so demo time. Now, I'm really asking for it by doing these sorts of demos, but we will see what happens. Okay. Don't fall off the stage, guy. Okay, so this, as you're seeing on screen here, is the control software for the whole system. So we would have an instance of this running in Christchurch and an instance of this running in Auckland. And I've just got to load up a few settings and turn on the camera. Right. Do you think we could have the house lights up just so that camera can see stuff? Awesome. Okay, so you can see the camera. The camera's here. Now you can always see all yourselves. Yay. And you can maybe see there's some little dots being drawn on that camera, or some little boxes of it detecting motion. I'm just going to put it back there nicely because it's a very nice controlled scene. And I just have to Now that green box is actually telling it to track stuff that's happening in that area. So if I wave in it, you can see that over on the right-hand side, it's freeze-framed it because it's detected some motion in the camera. So I'll go over to the other side now and just talk through this. This is a standard tennis ball training machine. So it, I'll hold it up. It's quite light, very portable, runs off a battery. If you play tennis, you may have seen them around. There's a guy in Auckland who sells them. About $1,000, not too bad. And it's got this neat little feature on the bottom, which makes it start kind of turning. So watch out, because I'm about to shoot you guys. Right, so the process, let me just... let me arm the machine. Thank you. All right. Okay, cool. So now that machine's ready to go. It's ready to start shooting tennis balls out, but as you can see, it's safe here. So this was something we had to build in. We had kids running along collecting tennis balls on each end as they gathered up by the screen. We had to give them an indicator for when it was safe, because if there were going to be tennis balls firing, you know, we didn't want any kids to get hurt. So I'm going to do something. I'm going to turn the safety off. And I'm going to drop this tennis ball in front of the camera. See what happens. That's interesting. It's not firing. Now it's firing. Right. Hopefully I don't break anything. There's only a few balls in there. Right. So I'm going to leave that demo right there and not push things any further. So as you can see, that's the basis for how we constructed a tennis competition between Auckland and Christchurch. So we had basically a bunch of those cameras set up. They detected the balls coming through. We had some code to work out which ball machine on the other end should fire them. And we could play some really good volleys. We had a good tournament. The Christchurch side won, so Auckland didn't really do the job there. But it was really good to see, you know, some good fun had by all, and it was a good marketing stunt for the ASB Classic tennis tournament. Right, let me just... Can't see the screen. Right. That's enough of that. I'll just go turn off that noise. Right. So, back to this. So as you can see, when I dropped the tennis ball in front of that camera, it didn't pick it up. And I'm going to go ahead and say that's probably because of the lighting in the room. It's a bit dark around that corner. Some of the other issues that we faced was that's kind of what a tennis ball looks like when it's sitting on the ground or moving very slowly. But even when you get a 10-year-old who's relatively good at tennis, that's what it actually ends up looking like on a sort of standard camera that only does 30 frames a second. So when we came to approaching the problem of building the algorithms which could actually track the ball, you know, there's some fancy stuff out there now where we could do things like we could train the computer what a tennis ball looks like from a whole bunch of different angles and it could see it. But that's not going to do you any good because it doesn't look like a tennis ball. It looks like a sort of transparent green smudge. So we actually had to take a step back and go to some far simpler algorithms that were just detecting changes in the image. And then we applied a little bit of stuff to do with color and a little bit of constraints around size so that it could be a lot more robust, hence why my hand could actually trigger it as well. And so going back to kind of what I'm talking about, this is a choice where we had to make. We couldn't use the latest and greatest because actually it just wasn't going to work. We had to go back to something more trustworthy and a bit more brute force, but it got the job done. Another one, this is what a tennis ball looks like in a tennis stadium, noon, when the sun streaming in, nice diffuse lighting, no shadows. This is what it looked like at 6 a.m. when we actually did the event and had to turn the stadium lights on for an hour. Those shadows also would cause a lot of trouble for an algorithm that wasn't expecting shadows. But because of the way that the lights are and the ball moves, those shadows move separately with the ball. Our simple just motion algorithm could tell the difference between the ball and the shadow in terms of its moving, and with a bit of color filtering there. And another challenge, this is a New Zealand challenge. This is something I'm hoping we in this room can really start to push for change in New Zealand, internet connection. We were streaming live video between Christchurch and Auckland, and latency is really important when you're playing a game of tennis. You know, if you're just kind of standing there and the ball shoots out and then you see it coming, that's kind of ruined your experience. That and also electromagnetic interference. So this guy's connected by Ethernet. Lesson I learned, don't run a power cable next to an Ethernet cable. Ethernet doesn't like it. Anyway, so I will just show you a fairly short video of the event. Oh, do we have sound? Ah, one moment. This guy here. Hang on, back.
Versace's gave RDI a pretty tough brief, we thought. In fact, we didn't know that the event could actually be delivered. So we're really thrilled that RDI have been able to partner with us and deliver such an amazing event.
Really clever guys. Yeah, definitely the kind of guys we want to work with to deliver great stuff like this.
Okay. All right, so next project. This is a bit of a different one. This is actually a game that we built. For Monteith's. How many of you, you may have heard of this, the Monteith's Great Meat Pack Hunt that they ran over the first half of this year. They were giving away meat packs every day if you played, and then the grand prize at the end was a big barbecue. So the idea came from this picture. So one of these creative people saw this picture, called us up, got us into a meeting, and he said, "Oh, I'm thinking of building this game where you go around and hunt the cuts of meat on an animal, but we want it to be kind of in the real world." So just to kind of show you the idea a bit more. So this is what it is. It's an augmented reality game. We've got a virtual animal there in a real view of the world. And so you get your phone out and you have to kind of find the animals around you, and then you have to hunt them. And when you shoot them, they start running away from you. There's a bull that charges you, that sort of stuff. But that immediately raises the question, okay, how do we actually track the real world with the virtual world and make them move together? And so we went through a few concepts. This is a screenshot of a process called SLAM, simultaneous localization and mapping. And it's a robotics technique to allow robots to build up a map of their world while they're navigating through it, and therefore allow them to go back and navigate back through it. So we thought, oh, well, that might be quite good. We can, as the user moves around, we can build up a model of the world that'll let us know where the ground is and that sort of stuff. Turned out putting that on a mobile phone, just not going to deliver the goods. Because the thing about making a game that actually has to go out to the world is it has to be really slick. You've got to give people no reason to decide that it's rubbish and put it away. The experience has to be easy. They have to get it in 5 seconds. So again, we can't really go with the kind of bleeding edge science stuff. We have to take it a few steps back and make sure it's going to be really reliable. Another one was called PTAM, which I've got the acronym written down here, parallel tracking and multiple mapping. So a similar idea, takes an image, picks out some points, you then move the camera, it watches how they move, and based on how they move, it can work out kind of where the ground plane is. Same story with that, really. It would have required us to get the user to do like a calibration move. And again, that's when you've got only a few seconds to get them hooked, that's gonna lose them. So one thing pretty much all phones have is one of these. They've got an inertial motion chip, got a gyroscope, accelerometer, all that sort of stuff. And that's what we ended up using. It's much simpler than some of these other fancy technologies. It has its host of its own problems, particularly not all of these chips are made equal. So the ones in the iPhones are really good. The ones in some of the Android phones are really terrible. There's actually a brilliant Vine on the internet with about 10 different Android phones sitting next to each other with their compass. One of them spinning, and the rest are all pointing in different directions. So it certainly had its challenges, but we kind of just went back to the maths and put together some good algorithms around solving that data, and ended up with an app that ended up being quite successful. Monteith sold out the entire stock they had of the beers they were selling for that promotion. There were something like 2,500 shots fired, something like national 60% accuracy. So I don't know, we might be good in a zombie apocalypse or something as a country. So just going into another video, this is the trailer for the app. Okay, so an example of one of the really cool things we can do with a phone that, you know, everybody in this room and pretty much everybody in the country has in their pocket now, you know. So it doesn't, we don't need to be giving them any particularly bleeding edge technology. We can make use of what they've got, and we can do things that, again, 10 years ago it just would not have been possible. So now is a really good time to be in technology, and we can start to do some really cool stuff. So moving on to the third project that I wanted to kind of show off today, because really I'm here to show off the good stuff that my team's doing. I'm incredibly privileged to work with a team of engineers who will work day and night to pull this sort of stuff off. So what you see in front of you here is a little CAD drawing. Has anybody seen the latest season of The Amazing Race, the New Zealand versus Australia one? Yep. And you saw the first episode where they had the tug of war and the Aussies got pulled into the mud, something we all love to see. Yeah, so as a promotional event for that for the launch of that TV series, TVNZ put on this shopping mall activation. So similar concept, I guess, to the tennis thing. We had a tug of war. So in Sylvia Park was one end of the rope, and in Westfield Parramatta was the other end of the rope. And we built a setup like this on each end. You got a video wall. We had some cameras dotted around the place doing a live video feed out to a website that TVNZ had set up. Behind the wall is a 2-ton concrete anchor that we had to design and build, and there's a rope coming out of this little hole here that people pull on. And then up on the side over here is a big television screen showing kind of a game view, giving you a leaderboard, showing you where the rope is during the match, showing you how much time is left, showing you who wins. That's what it looked like partway through construction in the middle of the night. And so inset in the corner here is a picture of me and our producer Alex over on the other side in Sydney once we finally got the two sides talking to each other. And that's a picture of the anchor, sort of a marvel of going overboard, I think. We weren't quite sure how much force people would pull with. We sort of thought, oh, what if we get, the Parramatta Eels turning up, big league players pulling really hard. The internet said different things about how much people could pull, and we're like, okay, we've got to assume that maybe four people could pull 500 kilos. We really don't want the thing to move or fall over, so we really just better make the anchor really heavy because it might slip on the ground. So we're like, okay, 2 tons, that'll be fine. Made life difficult, I'll tell you that. But to me, what I really liked about this project was we used Azure. Is that how you say it? That's how the Americans say it, I guess. To actually run the game. So the game actually ran in the cloud. We had a load cell, which is a piece of metal that when put under load, its resistance changes, so you can work out how much load is being put on it. So we had one of those attached between the anchor and the rope on each side. And then we had the game visuals. So I'm going to show you all this stuff in a moment. We'll have a bit of a strength contest in the room. So hopefully you've all had your Weet-Bix or had something for lunch that'll pump you up. And then the load cell was sending data up to the cloud, and the other load cell was doing the same. So it was telling us very frequently how hard people were pulling, and we did the math to work out, okay, well, this side's pulling harder, so we need to move the rope that way, or they've kept coming back, pulling it that way. And then the game visuals were basically pulling down that data from the cloud and just giving us a representation of the state of the game. Now, one thing that we had happen to us was we made the mistake of not having the computers on either end be exactly the same. And the one on the Australian end was a bit overloaded. Its CPU was a bit overloaded, and the audio started glitching because we were streaming video off it and a bunch of other things as well. But because of using this architecture and making things very modular, trustworthy building blocks, we found another laptop. We put the game visuals on the laptop, took some load off the machine that was doing all the other stuff, and it all just continued to work because it's just one building block doing its thing. They're not related to each other. It's trustworthy software, and it just continued to work. So, demo time. So this demo is going to require some audience participation. So, have we got any strong people in the room? Come on, we've got to have somebody in here who thinks they're strong. Stronger than other people in the room, maybe, that you don't actually have to be strong, you just have to be stronger. Come on, someone come up the front. Someone who feels they want to represent Australia.
Ooh. Ooh.
Well, you can represent New Zealand if you want. So if you want to represent Australia, come stand here. And if you want to represent New Zealand, come stand here. Come on, let's... First in, first serve, really, I guess. So you can pick up this... Right. So you can pick this up, and we'll see that as you pull on it, in theory, it'll say ready or not. That's a problem. Can you pull really hard on that for me? Oh, that'd be why. Okay, bear with me just a moment. I knew I was pushing it with the demo gods, but luckily we've got a little bit of time. So I will just check this out. Could you just pull on that one again, please? Right. Got some weight being measured now. All right. Okay, I have a suspicion New Zealand might lose this because that thing's measuring negative, but we'll just roll with this. We'll give the Aussies a chance. Now let me just check this one here. That one's still measuring. So, sir, could you grab the other one, which is over here, and just give it a good pull for me? We'll just make sure that it's... Okay, that's measuring. Cool. Right, let's go back to the game. Right, so, New Zealand, could you just pull for a moment? Come on. Yes, all right. So, keep doing that. Australia, pull as well. Both of you just pull as hard as you can. Right, and it'll go. Keep pulling, keep pulling. So we're having a, so as you see, so as they're pulling, it's measuring how much force, and it's moving the rope. And, come on, New Zealand, hold them to a draw, that's all we need. Oh, keep going, New Zealand. Oh, New Zealand lost. Unfortunate. It's very unpatriotic of me to set up a demo that New Zealand didn't win. Have to throw me out of the country. Right. So, we did that for several days in Australia and New Zealand. And there were about... Oh, yeah. Give them a hand. There were about 200 games played. New Zealand beat Australia by 1 point. Which was, we were a bit sweating a bit towards the end of the last day because we kind of knew the client, TVNZ, wanted New Zealand to win it. We weren't particularly comfortable about messing with the numbers. And so we were quite glad when New Zealand managed to pull it out by 1 point. It was a pretty good activation. But as you've just seen, there are challenges. When you're doing these sorts of things, when you're innovating, when you're trying to push boundaries in terms of the outcome, there are always going to be curveballs. Like, for some reason, your load cell decides to run out of battery or something and turn off. You get a poor internet connection in a shopping mall in Sydney. Australia is a challenge. I guess I should say that other countries are probably also a challenge. When you do business overseas, it's a challenge, and that's a part of innovation as well. You know, especially in New Zealand, we're looking to export our technology because there's not enough people here to really get us the Ferraris and Lamborghinis. So, you know, that's a thing we have to accept, and it's a challenge we have to really grab by the horns with innovation, is going and taking our products to other countries. So, one final video.
So today we're really here to test the entire setup of Tug of War. We're gonna set up two anchors, we're gonna test the video componentry, we're gonna set up video link, internet connectivity, we're gonna do a little bit of diagnostics, and also our two key staff that are heading over to Australia, they're gonna get training on how to assemble at Westfield Parramatta.
How many engineers does it take to figure out how to strop a belt?
Looks like six. So Rush Digital is really a video game specialist. There are three key components we designed from scratch. The anchor system, which is used as a counterweight for the contestants. So these are the bits that are actually gonna keep everything in one place. Each of these concrete blocks is one metric ton.
For country!
Two will go at each site, so two will be at Parramatta Westfield, and two will be in Sylvia Park. So the video streaming setup is basically each site has three high-speed, wide-angle cameras that feed into a custom streaming piece of hardware, and that streaming piece of hardware transmits a live video feed to the TVNZ streaming servers, being able to play a tug-of-war between Sydney and Auckland in real time. The AV equipment is the types of panels that you see at music festivals such as Rhythm and Vines. And the third element is the software component, the actual game experience. The force is measured using a load cell, which is a piece of metal that when loaded up changes resistance and allows us to get an idea of how much force is being applied. We're really looking forward to the Aussies being beaten by the Kiwis.
Good moment if it's.
It's been all tested, so it's going to be a fair fight.
Yes, that was a video that our friends at TVNZ put together for us, which was very nice of them. So, you've seen three projects, each in their own way, kind of out of the box. Certainly the tennis one for me was probably the most outrageous. By the time we came to doing the tug of war, we had kind of, I don't know, maybe got cocky. We sort of decided, oh yeah, we can do this. But what is it really that... that makes our team sit down in a meeting like that, and instead of having a heart attack, going, "Oh, yeah, we can do that. Yep, we can do that." And I just want to go through quickly a couple of attributes or things that we do that I think are crucial to the approach that Rush Digital as a team has, and why it is that we quite often find ourselves doing these sorts of projects that other people quite often say no to. So the most important thing, I think, is knowing what you don't know and then doing everything you can to turn those question marks into things that you do know. So there's this diagram that I found on the internet somewhere, and it kind of illustrates, so there's stuff that you don't know and you don't even know that you don't know it. There's stuff that you know but you don't realize you know it. That's this quadrant here. And then this... Hang on, other way around. Stuff you don't know, but you do know it. Anyway, you get the picture. The idea is move towards knowing stuff. Don't work with conjecture. Don't go, she'll be right. Don't make assumptions, because they really come back and bite you in the ass. We put an incredible amount of time into sitting down, workshopping, asking questions, asking the really dumb questions, you know, and we should ask the dumb question, are the computers exactly the same? Because yeah, it would have saved an interesting challenge. But I really got to underscore this. You, the the critical thing is to not make assumptions, and it's to not be scared off about not knowing stuff, because it's just technology. It is just a computer. It can, if it can be done with a computer, any one of us in this room can actually make it do it. It's just a matter of time and learning. The next thing that that I think is really important is to value research and development. And I'm not really talking about having an R&D team who are, you know, these guys locked away in a black cupboard and, you know, they never do any real work and they just go and do who knows what. What I'm talking about is having a team culture of being interested in technology, of giving stuff a go, getting hold of a Kinect 2, getting hold of an Oculus Rift or a Leap Motion or any of those sorts of things, having a play with it, knowing what its capabilities are. I was lucky enough in my job before it came to Rush to have done some work with OpenCV. So when we sat down with Saatchi's to do with this tennis thing over here, I sort of thought, oh yeah, well we could use cameras to track stuff. I've done that before. And so for us as part of our culture, we find it's really important to just try stuff. It's hard. It's hard in a environment where you've got to be billing all the time. But it's so important to just play with technology. And this is by no means everything we've played with. This is just what I could fit on a single slide. And then there's just no substitute for hard work, you know? All-nighter after all-nighter, if that's what it takes. That's kind of our team motto. You know, we will get it done no matter what. And you got to have that attitude if you want to push boundaries. So to conclude, and I actually have something to say after I conclude, which I thought of this morning, innovation is about delivering new experiences or outcomes. At Rush Digital, we do this by working with a whole lot of different technologies so that we know what can do what, and then we take the things we know we can trust and we put them together to make something that people really enjoy, something fun for the crowds, something that's a good marketing campaign, something that has just never been done before. And we call this innovation fit. And I guess my whole motivation for talking about this today is that we're in a time now where the rate of change in our world because of technology is just, it's so massive, it's so fast. And there are so many activities that we all do. My background is coming from working in the engineering industry. And there are so many things, say, for mechanical engineers, for civil engineers, that things that they do now or 5 years ago are becoming commoditized. You know, the things that Autodesk software can do just with the push of a button almost make having a team of 10 mechanical engineers redundant. And it's happening to all of us. It's happening to us in the industry building apps. You know, there's so many different platforms coming out that make it ridiculously cheap to build really simple apps, and it's lowering the price expectation. And so the challenge that I'd like to put to you all here today is, instead of being flattened by the wave that is technology, can you take a look at what it is that you're doing that's going to get commoditized by technology? Because it's happening to all of us. Work out what it is that's commoditizing your business and work out how to add value. Because it's not that complicated anymore to build an internet-connected tennis ball machine. You get an Arduino and a couple of bits and pieces and you put it together. You can do it. You can all do it. And so to my mind, we've got two choices in the industry today. We can sit back and we can get flattened by the wave of technology that's coming, or we can back ourselves, work really hard, come up with a way to take that technology and ride the wave instead. And so I guess that's the call to action that I'd like to leave you with today is what are you doing to make sure that you are taking advantage of this new technology that's coming along? So related content, there's a couple of sessions about Azure going on, and then there's the Internet of Things talk. You can find me on Twitter. Thank you very much. It looks like we've got a bit of time for questions if you want. Otherwise, I'll be hanging around here packing the stuff up, so feel free to pick my brains if there's anything you want to ask about.